You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super-duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, the Nichols and May of the Now Generation, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
Well, all right. This is Mike Edison here at the Mike and Judy Show, streaming live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick. And once again, I am surrounded by astonishingly brilliant and beautiful women, but none more so than my co-host with the most, Judy McGuire, the woman who is too hot for television.
Definitely.
It's the big sexy, Judy.
I know, it's very sexy, very big.
This is the show that's going to make us famous, I'm sure of it.
Apocalypse Now didn't do it.
This is it. Sex, 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 sex. Someone told me that sex sells.
These two ladies know all about selling the sex.
All right, well, let's get right to it. Let's introduce our guests.
Okay, first we have Rachel Kramer-Bussell.
Rachel is a senior editor at Penthouse Variations and Penthouse Magazines. She is an unbelievably prolific author and editor of erotica and organizer of great readings and events. Let's see. 39 anthologies, including
39.
It's not as sexy as 69, but
well, something to look forward to, something to work towards. I guess the most recent one here is Obsessed Erotic Romance for Women, but also Best Bondage Erotica of 2011 and 2012, Spanked Bottoms Up, Orgasmic Fast Girls, Gotta Have It, Do Not Disturb, etc., etc. It's unbelievable. Glad to see you here, Rachel Kramer.
Thank you,
also, her old pal. And also our new friend Sheila McClear is the author of Last of the Live Nude Girls.
Hi.
I just finished this book. It's amazing. It's really good.
Actually, why don't you tell us a little about your book? Last of all, were you really a live nude girl?
Yeah. I was one that... Well, I am. No, I was. There are still two peep shows left in Times Square, but I was working in the last... They're the last ones there, and I was working in them in 2006 through 2008 when I moved here. As
2 years, that's practically a career.
You know, I tell most people it's 18 months, but if I'm going to be honest about it, it was about 2 years.
Well, if there's anybody you can be honest with, it's Mike and Judy.
I feel that this is a safe space.
I was actually really relieved because when I first heard about the book, I was like, oh no, it's another writer who did something for a few months just to write about it. Like, oh, I'm going to say yes to every guy who asks me out. But then I read the book and it's like, okay, no, she needed the money.
Especially when I went to Bellevue. Yeah. When you end up in Bellevue,
such a scam. That was such a good moment in the book. No, it was a really amazing book. And I didn't even know there were peep shows left in Times
Square. Nobody knows, not even the people that come in.
I used to cover the peep shows for Screw Magazine. And I remember the last open window peep. Boy, that was scary. They used to have a metal sheet that came down. You put it in your recorder, and the window went up. And if you had your hand in there,
let me tell you, I have learned. I stayed away from the peep shows for I don't know how long. When I was writing the book, after I was done, I stayed away. But I went back a couple of weeks ago with reporters, and I sent them in to the first place I used to work. On 8th Avenue, and they are doing... They brought the open windows back.
Oh, that's scary. Man. Really?
For real.
Really?
That's I couldn't believe awful. It.
That's yeah. scary. So where did you work? Which peep show was it?
The first place was Gotham City 4, which is where they brought back the open windows, 781 8th Avenue at 47th. Second one was the Playpen at 43rd and 8th, which is now a Shake Shack. I wrote about the last days of it in the book. And then it closed in 2007.
I like the quality of the meat better at the Playpen.
Exactly. And then there's Gotham City 1, which they have now moved this playpen signage onto, which is just a block south.
And just like, as importantly, which are
40
the,
second
which are the peep shows that are still open.
So those two.
That's good. Let's field trip, Judy. So, Rachel, you write about sex all the time. You work for Penthouse. You're, I guess, one of the most prolific editors I know of erotica. Have you actually ever been a sex worker?
I have not. But I was going to say, I think it's interesting that, like, the Shake Shack, like that they're still they still exist now, but in the same location, but that's all Disney-fied.
Well, what happened to Playworld Palace, Showworld Palace on 42nd and 8th, which is now is doing, like, off Broadway theater to legitimize.
Yeah, I went to some arty event there a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Richard Bassiano, the sort of mob-connected owner, he still owns
allegedly.
That. Well, yeah, right. He owns that parcel. He still lives, like, on the fifth floor. He's about 80-something years old, and I think around 99, 2000, after the 60-40 laws and everything were enforced, he started renting it out to theater groups as entertainment. Mm-hmm. But there is, like, the neutered remains of a porn store on ground level, which they have the video booths and some porn. So Showworld's there just in a very much smaller form.
So, Rachel, what I wanted to ask you is what's the difference between erotica and pornography?
That's a good question. No matter how many times I get asked, I'm like, oh, I don't know. I think it's an interesting question because people do ask it. And, you know, to some degree, I think it's sort of a moot point because if you're into erotica, that's great. If you're into porn, that's great. If you're into both, you know, I think some of it is in the eye of the beholder, but I do think that there's a more direct, like, I think both of them, the point is to arouse people, but in porn, I think it's more direct. Like, there's no also something else going on. That's just the point. And then in erotica, I think there's also, you know, a story going on, and there can be, like, you know, sort of a poetic nature to it. I don't really think there's...
Well, old school pornography used to have stories.
That's
like,
true.
Like nurses, and the story was they wanted to fuck everybody. But that's
no, but they were also like big... There were big budget... I mean, there was... They right. were more like movies than just
like
the
video
sex
glory
scenes.
Holes.
So I don't know. So where is that line? I don't know.
Oh, I'm guessing a lot of your readers are women, people who read your books?
I think mostly, but definitely men as well.
And, you know, I've read your books, I've looked at your stuff, and I've been to your events, which are always awesome. And honestly, I don't really know where the line is either. I think it's pornographic. That's not in the pejorative. That's not a condemnation.
And I don't think anyone, if you're writing erotica, should take offense at someone calling your work pornographic, because that's the point of it. I mean, you can also do other things with it. But I think if it's not arousing on some level, then, you know, why it's not necessarily erotica.
Judy, you've written some pornography.
I have. I wrote some for you, Mike Edison.
That was
when
awesome.
You were working at Climax Magazine with the wipe clean centerfold.
That was with the days.
Are you serious?
It had a triple coated centerfold so you could wipe it off
when you're
done. And they were always like, it wasn't like a penthouse pet either. It was kind of like, they weren't such great looking girls. But yeah, you could
Climax on a budget. And what do you recall what you wrote?
I wrote an advice column from a man and a woman's point of view. My sound is really weird today.
So you also wrote the guy's point of view?
Yeah, I was a couple. I did that. This is why I can never write erotica, because it always turns out stupid. I wrote a story about a guy who lost his virginity at the mall at the Jeans Hut.
It was
so not hot. Yeah. And there was measuring of inseams. It was really stupid.
The measuring of inseams, that's
wow.
awesome. I've written 28 pornographic novels. Not one word of erotica, I promise you. And I never measured anyone's inseam, but I like that
setup. Now I'm intrigued by the inseam.
You know, before or earlier, we were at the bar getting a little juiced for today's show, and you guys were talking about dating virgins. Want to share some experiences, ladies? I know our listeners want to hear them.
I you know what? I don't think I've dated a virgin since I was a virgin. I've dated closet cases, which is a whole different thing because they're really hostile. But a virgin,
whoa.
Yeah. Like, this guy told me, he's like, I just find female genitalia repulsive.
Wait, and he was dating you?
Nice. Yes. Yeah. I was like, well, maybe you should be going out with a guy, but he was super Catholic. And this is your friend, Mike.
Wow.
My friend? I have...
Always a Catholic.
Seriously, my friends? I don't, some of my friends are repulsed by female genitalia.
I know.
I mean, some of my straight friends, I mean.
But yeah, I bet there are straight guys who are also, like, misogynistic. But that's different than
no,
what you're saying.
He was so homophobic, which is always the tell. But Rachel, didn't you date someone who was kind of virginal?
Did you say kind of virginal? Like never been fucked.
Can I plead the fifth on this?
Okay.
Well, I can say that I wrote about, I was a virgin until I was 21. And once my 22nd birthday got a little closer, I just had to do it. But, like, the problem was, like, even when I was 19, 20, I was trying to lose my virginity, and guys won't do it because they think you're going to get all attached to them and, like, take it seriously. And, you know,
take it seriously. God forbid.
I didn't mean to lose it as late as I did. I mean, I was all like, the Baptist church did a really good job with me, but, like, wow. I didn't mean to, like, make it take till I was 21. It's just, like, guys won't do it if you're, like, honest about
it. That's interesting. I wouldn't think that would be the case.
I did go to U of M and I hung out with a lot of like politically correct dudes. So that might have been part of it. They wanted to be like sensitive or whatever.
I like the part where the author of Last of the Live Nude Girl says the Baptist Church did a really good job with her.
Until.
So when you wrote this book, Sheila, what is the reaction of family, former members of the church, coworkers, and potential employers? Because I think this is something that we all... All of us write about sex all the time and drugs. Judy and I both written a lot about drugs as well as sex. And this is definitely a scorched earth policy, I like to think of it as.
A lot of people are hiring you.
Well, I can.
What you see is what you get. You're not going to find anything on Facebook that's more condemning than we've written ourselves.
I do like the scorched earth policy. I can say that the first question in the job interview at the newspaper I work at now was, so you were a sex worker? I said, well, a stripper, you know, whatever. And she asked me, you know, this is the first question of a, you know, place that I'd been freelancing for. And actually, I got hired, but she asked me if I made a lot of money. I said, yeah, I made a lot of money. And she said, that's surprising.
Whoa.
Okay.
Wow.
And my family's not happy with me, but we deal with it. I think the best way to deal with it is by not talking about it.
Yes.
That would be the Baptist
denial.
Way.
But, you know, my
Catholic
dad, I've been avoiding, I've been dodging calls from my dad because, like, I'm scared of him right now. Like, he's like, you know, your dad's scarier than your mom. My mom's read part of it, and she's kind of cool with it, but not really. But I'm just scared of my dad still.
Well,
today,
I just tell my family don't read anything I write.
Yeah, I told them not
to read
it.
Policy because it will. You can't read that, read something and then not, you know, unread it in your head.
I know. I already.
They won't let
me
date.
My uncle read it. My book. Well, and he thinks I'm a big slut, and he told my whole family what a whore I was. So,
yeah, well,
I mean, at least
you
get to know people's real opinions. But it's like, I feel like if you don't think you can handle it, don't read it.
And my dad can't handle knowing somebody took a shit in my bed.
I don't think any dad could handle that.
I can't.
Yeah, I think it's a little worse with women and their dads when you're talking about sex. Now,
yeah.
My dad read my book, which has some sex in it, but it's largely about.
Drugs.
My enthusiasm for cocaine and LSD and professional wrestling, which seems to piss him off, or did when he was still alive, more than anything. In fact, I think that may have actually sent him to his grave, was his highly educated son's love of professional wrestling, which he thought was much more offensive than my job working for the drug magazine or my job working for the porn magazine.
Oh, I saw CM Punk on TV last night.
He's the most controversial man in professional wrestling.
A lot smaller than I thought he would be.
I don't know what to say to that.
I thought he'd be like a big, huge, you know.
You know what? You know what? Maybe he lacks in brawn. He makes up with his colossal super brain.
I have no idea who that is.
It's some wrestler that he keeps talking about, and I had no idea who he was talking about.
The most exciting man in professional wrestling today.
Yeah, okay.
But you know, but the thing is, my mother never read my book I Have Fun Everywhere I Go, which, you know, obviously does talk a lot about drugs. And she just says to me, Michael, will this book upset me? Yes. Well, what's it about? Well, it's about me doing questionable things in questionable places with questionable people. And, you know, the idea, well, that I even wrote a book, that it exists, that it's in the marketplace, that you can go to a store and buy it, is, you know, kind of out of her reach, you know, because people she knows don't write books. You know, they're not immediate. Sort of this weird thing. She saw a copy of it at my brother's house. It was sitting on the kitchen counter, and she looked at it just... kind of like a monkey finding a bright red rubber ball in his cage. What is this? You know, and sort of inspecting it and looking at it from all sorts of different angles.
Not opening it?
Well, my brother tried to wrest it from her hands, and she opened it to one page, and I think this was the page where I was writing Feliz Cumpleaños and cocaine on a giant mirror, right? and apparently she pretty much dropped to the floor, clutching her chest. She called me up, said, "You still on that shit, Michael?" I talked to her, but like maybe 10 minutes before she had called me saying, "Oh, I'm at your brother's house. Everything was fine." 10 minutes later, I was a pariah. You know, nothing's changed, Mom.
Rachel, how do your parents feel? I mean, because you've even got like naughty photos out there.
My mom is super pretty much against like everything I do, we kind of don't talk about it. Whether it's, you know, first person writing or erotica, like I don't even know if she knows. She knows I've edited books, but I don't know if she knows like how many. Because the thing is, if your 39. Book's called Best Bondage Erotica or Spanked, it's not really like unclear what it's about. So, and I understand that to a degree. I'm not saying I think she should read it, but you know, we have a lot of issues. And my dad and my grandfather's a writer. He wrote a memoir. Like, I think they're like, are you happy doing what you do? Are you successful? You know, is that fulfilling to you? Okay. Like, they don't need to police it.
That's very enlightening.
Which was a better year for Bondage Erotica, 2011 or 2012?
Well, 2012 is coming out in December, and I love, there's two stories about women who tie themselves up. Like, they're so into bondage, and they don't have a partner. And this one woman, like, goes to this whole elaborate thing where there's, like, ice, and there's a key melted in the ice. I'm like, you what? Have to be really into bondage.
I like that.
Like, I don't know. To me, like, if I'm doing bondage, like, the point is that someone is doing it to me, not that I'm doing all the work. And I'm fascinated by that.
I like that. I like that twist. I think my problem with the people who say they write erotica and run away from the word pornography is it tends to be very precious.
The
writing tends to be precious. Yeah, and the people writing it, and they feel like, wow. I mean, we've been to a lot of these readings, and it runs the gamut of completely pretentious stories about flowery stories about my orgasm to like some really nitty gritty good writing, you know, about sex. And honestly, the sex writing, the best stuff is not the insert tab A and tab B part of it. It's not the blow by blow. It's really the setup. It's the anticipation.
I agree with that. And I think the difference, one, not necessarily the difference, but in some of the erotic I've written or edited, I mean, there is a lot going on and there's the tension. I mean, whether it's because you're into someone that you can't have, or you're doing something you're not supposed to do, or whatever. I mean, it really isn't just a sex scene. And I think that's, sometimes people send me stories where what they've written is interesting, but there isn't, you don't know why the people are there. You just know what they're doing. And that's not that hot to me.
All right, I'll tell you what, let's take a break. When we come back, we got a special treat. Sheila's going to read from her book with some musical accompaniment, no less.
By who?
Who could it be? And more questions for Rachel. Boy, do I have some questions for Rachel. This is the Mike and Judy Show.
Come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex.
Let's talk about sex for now. To the people at home or in the crowd, it keeps coming up anyhow. Don't decoy, avoid, or make void the topic, cause that ain't gonna stop it. Now we talk about sex on the radio and video shows. Many will know anything goes. Let's tell it like it is and how it could be, how it was, and of course how it should be. Those who think it's dirty have a choice. Pick up the needle, press pause, or turn the radio off. Will that stop us, Pat? Alright then, come on, spin.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you.
Make any man's eyes pop. She uses, she got to get whatever she don't got. Fellas droop like fools, but then again, they're only human. The chick was a hit because her body was booming up. Gold, pearl, rubies, crazy diamonds. Nothing she wore was ever common. Her dates, heads of state, men of taste, lawyers, doctors. No one was too great for her to get with or even mess with. The press, she says, was next on her list. And believe me, you, it's as good as true. There ain't a man alive that she couldn't get next to. She had it all in the bag. She should have been glad, but she was mad and sad and feeling bad, thinking about the things that she never had. No love, just sex, followed next with a check and a note that last night was dope, 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 dope.
Take it easy. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex.
All right,
Yo, Pat, I don't think they're gonna... All right. We're here back at the Mike and Judy Show, streaming live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria. This is the Big Sexy. Here with me, my co-host Judy McGuire, Rachel Kramer Bussell, esteemed editor of erotica and pornography, both. She does both.
And cupcakes.
And brought us cupcakes.
Has a cupcakes blog and is going on a cupcakes cruise.
A cupcakes cruise.
I'm sure there'll be something to write about.
And, of course, Sheila McClear, author of Last Alive, New Girls. Now, I think a little interlude. I believe Sheila is going to read to us from her book. And
Mike Edison will accompany her on guitar. It'll be like a beatnik happening.
It is a happening. It's always a beat happening here at the Mike and Judy Show.
Everyone control your excitement. All night, men came in off the street and told me things. They are usually alone. They dropped their pants and masturbated behind glass windows. They shamelessly bargained and asked us if we did sex. $200, they repeated over and over in foreign accents, unblinking, until I laughed or sighed or tried not to scream. A bored southern salesman chewed a toothpick while watching me. A sloppily dressed schoolteacher from Westchester passed a note through the slot reading, "Wear the flowered schoolgirl panties. I'll go wild." They stooped and genuflected to put money through the slot, sawed into the red-painted booth. We told the men the show was 5 minutes long, but the curtain went down after 3.5. Sometimes one of them might enter his side of the booth and cry. It was not equipped to handle all this heaviness. It was better to think of myself as a channel, letting people and their stories flow through me, releasing them back out into the world. My survival in the peep show was based on hustling, convincing the neon overdose tourists and curious college boys and ghetto kids from the Bronx and Mexican laborers and guilt-ridden street preachers, plus the natives, the sundry damaged goods of Times Square, to pay $35 to watch me take my clothes off with the bare minimum of enthusiasm behind glass. My fellow live girls were mostly Spanish or Black or from the Bronx or the projects. One girl named Violet came from a similar background. She was white like me, a plain-looking girl with a constant amused twinkle in her eye. She was around my age and from the Midwest. Like me, she had a college degree. Hers was in social work. "I just wish I were using it somehow," she said one day, sitting in the dressing room. "Oh, you are," I said, thinking of the nightly parade of dysfunctional men. She looked at me askance. "So, are you like an artist or a student or something?" she asked. I shrugged. I wasn't sure either. I was alone in the city, and the peep show provided a place to hide. No one there knew quite what to make of me. Did I just move here? Couldn't I have found something better? Was I sort of a loser? Violet was addicted to the peep show. She made at least $400 a shift and worked 5 nights a week. I couldn't figure out why she made so much money. She wore her hair long and mousy brown, with glasses, no makeup, and a plain cotton bra and panty set. She spent her shifts leaning against the door of her booth, one white platform heel crossed over the other, flipping through upscale shelter magazines, figuring out what to buy next. But Violet was articulate, and she spoke for everyone in recognizing the dissociative unreality that we all experience several nights a week in Times Square. "So last night, I was in a show, right?" she said. "I was like down on the floor, on my knees or whatever, you know, pretending to suck this guy's dick through the glass. I'm looking up at it. I'm looking this guy's dick right in the eye. And it's looking back at me, and suddenly I thought to myself, how the hell did I end up here?" Walking into the Gotham City video for the first time in the summer of 2006, I was assaulted by the smell. Sharp, pungent, sickly sweet. A cocktail of Pine Sol, Windex, and bleach, plus a surface cleaner sprayed liberally around the store as air freshener. The overall effect of the porn shop on 8th Avenue dulled the senses and was profoundly unsexy. Nothing as numbing as rack after rack of pornographic videos. Their covers showcasing clinical, fully splayed genitalia of every variety. She-male, barely legal, animal. Mirrored walls were covered with dildos, vibrators, fake fur-lined handcuffs, and little outfits, the cheap themed kind that came in clear plastic bags. overhead fluorescent lights were as bright as a Guantanamo's prisoner cell at night, and the stairs were in rainbow colors, each one labeled with the words live, sexy, fantasy girls. A banner at the top advertised live sexy girls. The carnival environment would lose its effect over time. After a few months, I wouldn't even notice the flashing lights and the dildos. When I first wandered into the peep show, it was 6 o'clock, which meant that men were filing home from work, getting distracted by the neon, and slipping furtively inside. It was prime time in live girl land.
All right.
Great job.
Awesome. Ow!
So when you guys are writing about personal experiences, I know, you know, obviously Sheila did and Rachel. I mean, if you read anything of Rachel's, you know, she reveals a lot. How much, when do you, where do you draw the line? I mean, how do you?
How do I know what's okay to?
Yeah, what's okay to share and what is too vulnerable?
This is my problem. I don't know where
really
to draw the line.
It's really hard because sometimes I don't think I've always made the wisest decisions, and then later I'm like, oh. I mean, I think it's also collectively... Oh.
Writer's regret.
It's also collectively, you know, if I meet someone and then they Google me or go to my website, I mean, there's just so much information. But on the other hand, I mean, I always say that writing, I think, is really selfish. So I'm doing it first and foremost, I think, to learn about myself and to process things. And then hopefully if other people find them relatable or interesting, like, that's great. But I think you can write honestly without compromising someone else's identity or privacy necessarily. Right. I mean, they might read it, but I feel like, you know, they're also entitled to tell their own story if they wanted to. Someone asked me yesterday, I wrote a piece for the Frisky called Sex with a Top Chef about this one night stand.
You had sex with a top chef?
I did not. Well, I got naked with this chef in Los Angeles. And you know, it's interesting because this woman was asking me, you know, about writing the piece and some of the comments about it. And then after it was officially over, she's like, so tell me who it was, which I'm not going to reveal on the air here. But the reason I wrote about it in that way was that part of the thing that we had was that I was impressed that he was a top chef, which is why I like would go out with a total stranger. Whereas, so if he was just Joe Schmo on the street, like I probably wouldn't be like, here's my phone number.
Okay. I want to go back for a second. Okay. Here's the headline. I got naked with a top chef. That's it.
It was called Sex with a Top Chef. Yeah. That was the headline.
And
So I was in LA and I had actually taped something, Throwdown with Bobby Flay. I was a guest judge. And so I got out at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and it was a beautiful day and I was all dressed up and I felt really good. I was like, this is fun and I have nowhere to be. And I met this guy at his place of employment and we started talking about food. And I was eating some of his food. And, you know, he was flirting with me. And I didn't really think he was... I thought this was like a joke. I'm like, I'm in LA. Like, this is so weird. And so, anyway, I wound up going on a date with him. And then he brought his assistant on the date.
Oh, I did read this.
And it was so weird. I'm like, this is so weird. And he was like, oh, it's her birthday. And the weirdest, weirdest part is that we all wound up back at my hotel room. And now... You would think maybe he's like trying to have a threesome, but really he was like, no, assistant, you sit in the corner and like read a book while we fool around. That was the weirdest part. And he was like, do you want me to send? I was like, I feel really weird. He's like, do you want me to send her down to the bar? I'm like, no, I felt bad for her. And it was just not sexy. It was so weird. I still don't understand it. And they had this weird, I don't think they were actually having sex, but they had this weird, I mean, who would allow that? Like, why would she be like, sure, I'll just wait for you to finish fooling around.
This is, sounds so Los Angeles. This is
it
not,
was so
this
weird.
This is not the New York way of doing
and
things.
And then at 7:30 in the morning, he texted me and he was like, do you like threesomes? He wound up leaving and then I was like, this is so, I was like, I don't know what's going on, but my life is too weird.
Let me ask both of you guys, how many creeps do you get at your events? How many creeps are chasing you on Facebook? How many people are stalking you on the internet?
I just started to learn what this is like because I've done one reading and then I've done a lot of media and my Facebook is like a crypt of death. Like I don't even want to go near it. Like it's terrible. It's a disaster. And then the thing about readings is you can't stop anyone from coming. So you have like dudes
coming.
You have, I mean, I had like a guy that I slept with and didn't want to see, but wanted to see me and asked me out, come to my last event, and like two random New York Post readers who look from like Carl from Aqua Teen Hunger Force. And the last month for me, it's like I get a lot of attention, but none of it is the attention I want
right.
from the people I want it from. But you don't get to choose.
It's going
to
change today with this appearance of the Mike and Judy show.
Yeah, see, that's life. You don't get to choose the attention.
We have a very good-looking, intelligent, affluent audience. I'm sure of it. And Rachel, what about you? I mean, your gigs, you do these erotic readings, and they're always packed. And you give away cupcakes.
There was
just another invitation
one
to grapes.
Person, an ongoing guy we called Creepy Guy, because he would come to the end of my readings and then just hang out. Like, he wouldn't partake of the reading. He would just hang out and then sort of skulk around. Like, that's the only way to describe it. And it was really weird because he wouldn't even really try to talk to me. But then I ran into him twice in Union Square, like once at Barnes & Noble, and actually twice at Whole Foods. And that was weird.
That's
and then
scary.
Once I got off the subway and he was just sitting at the stop where I live, and he was sitting on the bench, and then he didn't get on the train, and I was like, okay, that's weird. That's probably the closest. And then I had one guy whose phone number I'd given my phone number because I was doing a story not related to sex, and then like he started calling me like incessantly, and I had to be like, don't call me, I'm gonna call the police.
I gotta say, I think you guys are extremely brave and courageous for what you do. I really have like so much respect for it, for putting it out there, for laying it out, letting the cards fall where they may. We were going to talk about just for a second about Melissa Petro, the school teacher who basically got shit canned because she had been blogging about her former career as a call girl. And, you know, I mean, just to put it out there and potentially burn bridges, to be honest, personally, you know how I feel about this. What you do on your own goddamn time is your own goddamn business. And as long as it's not affecting your job, you know, Judy, when we used to work at High Times, I feel the same way. People would drug test you. Pot tests are very unreliable because they test you for what you did 4 days ago.
Or a month ago.
Or a month ago. It's not.
And I didn't even smoke pot and I still get the stigma, damn it.
Yeah, the High Times thing is an albatross. But the thing is, what you do in your own time is your own business. And, you know, certainly we're adults. We should be able to handle a wide range of adult activities and topics in our writing and our regular lives. We shouldn't have to breathe into our square day jobs, which unfortunately we still have to have once in a while.
I mean, I agree, but I also think the reality of modern life is that, you know, not everyone is going to agree with that.
Yeah. No, the world is filled with squares. And the problem with reform people is they always want to rain on my motherfucking parade.
And the problem with the internet is that the squares can Google you. So yeah. It's like way worse than it used to ever be.
Everybody's got a Google machine. So what have we learned from this experience? Have we taken any hard lessons out
of writing this book? The internet should be shut down. Oh.
That's a pretty tough stance there, Miss McClure. Wow.
I think it's like rock and roll here to stay.
So, well, thank you so much, you guys, for coming in. It was a great, you know, it was great to talk to you.
But for those people who do want to stalk you, Rachel, where can they find you?
RachelKramerBustle.com and at Rakelita on Twitter.
All right. Any upcoming events you want to plug?
I am having a book party August 25th at Fontana's for Obsessed, and there's going to be book cover cupcakes.
I'm very excited about that.
So all you stalkers out there, come to the Obsessed Book Cover Cupcake Party at Fontana's on the 25th and find Rachel on the internet. And Sheila, where are you going to be? Where can we come? We'll
I'm going to be at McNally Jackson this Tuesday doing a reading. So I invite you all to come and rub yourself all over the books or whatever it is that you people do while I'm reading.
Okay. Well, you guys are awesome, very brave and courageous, and your books are fantastic. Judy,
how you feeling? I'm feeling good.
Feeling sexy?
Not really.
All right. Once again, this is Mike Edison with Judy McGuire, the Mike and Judy Show. Thanks to Carlos, our guest engineer today, and to Rachel and Sheila. We'll see you guys next week.
New York Night Train, Summer Soul Shindig, Rockaway Beach Party, featuring the 45 RPM soul magic of DJ Jonathan Tobin. Saturday, August 20th, 6 to 9 at Rippers, Boardwalk 86. Free party!